Your employees expect top-tier medical benefits, like comprehensive care access. But how can you balance these expectations against rising costs across your full benefits portfolio? Find savings and opportunities in your most highly utilized benefit, your pharmacy plan. Did you know that hospital employees fill 25% more prescriptions each year than other industries? How can you tell if all those prescriptions were needed or if you could have had significant cost savings by filling at your own hospital pharmacies? Tap into these opportunities with an independent pharmacy benefits partner and solutions designed around your unique requirements and resources. RX Benefits provides pharmacy benefit strategies, from expert advisory services to programs that leverage your hospital pharmacy's purchasing power, all while offering competitive benefits with award-winning customer service. We've been working with hospitals for over 15 years, and our clients range from rural and critical access hospitals to large health systems, with healthcare-specific solutions that make the most of hospital assets and dispensing capabilities. Visit us at employers.rxbenefits.com or click the link in the show notes to learn how to boost your benefits with an optimized pharmacy plan.
Astro listeners, welcome to another episode of the Astro Podcast. I'm your co-host, Luke Kerrigan, here with your other wonderful, beautiful, and getting ripped because he's been working out, co-host Bo Brabo. And very honored today. We have an awesome guest for you. This guest, Bo, by the way, he and I were named, you know, because we're famous, to a list of the top 40 healthcare recruitment influencers to follow in 2024. So if you're not following, I know, right? What were you going to say?
Follow you. I said, I hope everybody's following you.
Yeah. So you need to go jump on, follow Luke Kerrigan, right? And then you need to also follow Matt Craven, not only because he's on the list and on this podcast, but he's got some great articles, Bo, written on LinkedIn about recruitment that are just plain fun and to the point and simple. So, and I love it. I'm excited to get into this conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Matt Craven, who is the Director of Talent Acquisition at City of Hope. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me here. And, I didn't even know I was listed on that list of influencers until my boss emailed me and said, hey, Matt, I guess you're famous now. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he sent me the link and I'm like, gosh, you would think they would tell me before my boss would find out. But it was kind of funny to hear that. But hey, it's an honor to be recognized. But, you know, it's not something that I'm sitting there going after every single day. I just want to be a contributor to the community. Been in talent acquisition for over 25 years and in healthcare for the last, I've been in it for about 14 years. Really, my goal is to help others and to help get better our industry in talent acquisition, but also get better at what we do in healthcare. Because in all reality, you know, we'll probably get into the discussion here is, you know, healthcare is one of the most difficult industries to recruit in. And I know there's a lot of tech recruiters out there that'll fight me tooth and nail on this, but I think healthcare is one of the most complex, difficult industries to recruit, source, and acquire talent. And so I think it's a fun industry to be in, but it's also a very challenging one as well.
I couldn't agree more. And so challenging because you have to recruit for, you know, everything. Like it's, some other companies, they have a profile they recruit for. I'm not saying it's as easy as rinse and repeat, but it's in the same side of the baseball field that they're recruiting in most of the time. Healthcare is just wildly different. You have recs, you know, where you need an ICU nurse and a gift shop attendant and someone to work a parking deck and a lawyer. Yeah. And, you know, it doesn't end. It doesn't end. What, how do you, you know, well, let's start here. So I noticed in your background, and let's talk about that. You know, you didn't come from the healthcare industry. You came from different industries. Tell me how that kind of influenced what you do now and why make the switch?
Well, everything that happens accidentally on purpose, as I say. You know, I work for Washington Mutual. If you remember that company, they no longer exist anymore. They were my first foothold into talent acquisition. I met with a VP and I was wanting to be a recruiter. That's kind of what I wanted to do. I made that decision. I was going to go into recruiting and work there for 3 years. Would have been there for a long time, but they ended up doing a RIF right after 9/11. And then shortly after, they kind of closed up shop there. But when I got laid off, I really wanted to determine where I wanted to go next and what industry I wanted to go into. And I saw healthcare out there, and it was interesting. There was a hospital about an hour away from me, and they had an opening, and I saw it had been open for over a year. And so I reached out to them, applied. They interviewed me, and they said, you know what? We really want a nurse as a nurse recruiter. And I said, okay, fine. So I went home. I have a severance package. I'm waiting around looking for that great job for the next 3 months. But next week I said, you know what? I really want this job. So I called them up and I said, you know what? Hire me as a contractor. If I suck, fire me. If I'm good, you hire me on. And so they did. And so that's where I came in. And then I realized, to the point of what you talked about in the different roles, I didn't know anything about healthcare, and it is not as easy as it is. And a nurse is not a nurse, and a search tech is something that was foreign to me. A clinical lab scientist was like, whoa, I don't even know what the heck that is right there. And so I almost used that whole first year at this first organization as a learning opportunity to really understand what healthcare was. But in that process, one of their challenges that they had is they had a lot of travelers. We know that horrible word right there, contract staff. And they asked me to come in and eliminate it. And I did. I eliminated almost half of their traveler cost in 1 year. And we did a lot of cool things in working with the executive team to make it happen right there. And that's when I realized that I fell in love with healthcare. And so then I continued on my journey. And then went into consulting for a couple of years, went into leadership. And then the economy kind of messes things up. The economy tanked again around 2009-10. And I had to go find another opportunity. And a tech company, Schneider Electric, reached out to me and said that we have a contract position open. That was supposed to be a contract job for about 18 months. I was there for 11 years. I would say it was the best opportunity that I ever had. Great organization, great people. What I learned from there, what I would have never learned in healthcare. And so about in year 9, I knew I wanted to get back into healthcare because it wasn't my intent to leave healthcare. I really wanted to stay in healthcare, but this was just an accidental opportunity. And then it just gave me lots of opportunities to grow professionally and learn different things and build a sourcing team, actually run an ATS and actually deploy an ATS into an organization in over 3 countries. And so when year 9 hit, I said, I really want to get back into healthcare. And year 10 and a half, I actually found that great hospital to work with and a great leader and joined Peace Health and worked there for a couple of years. And then my boss who hired me moved to City of Hope, and here I am today. So my journey really wasn't the big blip of 10 years really was just accidental, but it was probably the best accident that ever happened for me because it gave me a different perspective. And as you know, if you're a healthcare recruiter and you've not recruited anything else but healthcare, I think you don't really understand the variety of different things that are out there that you can be exposed to that can really help us in healthcare in the way we recruit in healthcare as well there.
So true. So true. What would you say, and I'm really curious, and I know you probably have a great answer for this because I read your LinkedIn articles since we are, you know, big influencers in space, but I know it's tough to say that with a straight face, at least for me. What would you say, how does mindset and helping your team with their mindset play into healthcare talent acquisition today? Because it is not an easy job, right? But one thing that comes through in all of your articles that you write, Matt, is it's to focus on having fun at the same time, right? And that clearly comes through your writing. So can you talk on that a little bit?
You know, what we do is serious stuff in healthcare. And even though we're not caring for patients, we're helping our organization find great people that are going to care for patients, that are going to care for your mom, your dad, your brother, your sister, your friend. And you know, that's serious stuff. And so, you know, one of the things I've always told, and I'll get to the fun part here in a second here. One of the things I've always told my team is that, remember, when you're talking to people, Imagine if you would want that person to take care of one of your loved ones. And if you don't, then we probably don't want them in this organization, because if you don't think you could trust them taking care of your mom, your grandmother, or whatever, then they're probably not a right fit for this opportunity here. But how do I turn that into fun? Is that what we do is very serious. And what we do can be a lot of fun. I mean, the job that we have, we get to talk to people every day. We get to know people. We get to build relationships. We get to understand the needs and wants of people that are looking for work, or people that may even not know that they're looking for work. But now that we've talked to them, they're opening it up. And so enjoying those conversations and enjoying those wins and celebrating anything that we do that can have a positive outcome is so important, because if you just focus on, we don't have enough nurses, which every hospital says, if you focus on the rejections, you focus on those things that can get you down, it's going to be a hard job. And sourcing is very difficult. And one of the things, one of the blogs I just posted last week, it can be very discouraging to source in healthcare, because you do it for a day or two and you get nothing. And then you're like, sourcing doesn't work. But in all reality, it's all about building momentum. And then all of a sudden you'll see the fruits of your labor, and then you can celebrate. And then you're excited about what you're doing here, and what you're doing as a recruiter, and what you're doing as a healthcare professional in recruitment as well there. So, you know, fun is so important. And what I try to, one of the things that I shared with my team is that when I was sourcing every single day, and I do kind of still anyway, is I had a peer of mine, and we would sit there and say, how many people did you reach out to? How many people did you get to respond back to you? And it was more of a competition just between the two of us. He would beat me one day by 5 people. And then, so that make me work harder tomorrow. And it was kind of gamified the activities that we do. So that way it makes it exciting. It makes it not just like you're having to go through the process just to find somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So true. Talk to us more about, and I love how you articulated this, sourcing. So it's the most challenging part of recruitment, at least in my opinion. And I have another story to share in a minute on that. But tell me how you plan for sourcing, because it is like, it just in every health system I go to, I feel like, well, let me tell you this story. So I talked to a health system last week. I was in person with them, right? And they're doing super well. They're doing great. They have amazing leadership. I'm not going to call them out, but they're doing really well. And they were crushing it in sourcing. So, like, you know, it wasn't rocket science to me to see why they were doing well. So I asked her, well, how are you doing this? How are you doing sourcing? And she looks at me and goes, it's easy. I put my most experienced people on sourcing. And it seems like the rest of the industry is a little bit flip-flopped. A lot of times you see entry-level folks coming in. They're like, guess what? You're going to be a sourcer and then work your way up. This company said, no, it's a challenging, tough job. I want my most experienced people doing that. And if I can get the right people at the beginning, the rest of my team can bring it into place. What are your thoughts?
I agree with that in one context. Sourcing is not a junior role.
It's not.
But I also will say, and I'm talking monotone here for a second, and you'll get me animated a moment here, but I think sourcing is not a junior role. It is a senior type of position here. But what I get frustrated in, and when we identify people that we think are going to be sourcers by years or tenure or whatever, is that it's not a years of experience thing. It's a mindset. And, you know, you have to have that mindset of wanting to take risks. You want to be able to know that you're in that mindset of you're willing to take risks. You're willing to go the extra mile. You're willing to have a conversation. So many recruiters in TA, and this is anywhere, not just in healthcare, so many recruiters in TA have a fear of actually engaging and talking to candidates. And it's interesting. I don't know where that came from. I know technology has played a part of it, but we've gotten to a place where recruiters don't want to talk to candidates. And so candidates then lose that experience in learning about opportunities here. But to get back to sourcing, you know, sourcing, you have to have that mindset. You don't have to have years and years of experience. My best sourcer, and somebody that I brought over from my last organization, she only has a few years of experience as a recruiter. But you know what? She has that mindset, that go-getter, that no fear mindset of, you know, I'm going to reach out to people on the phone. I'm going to reach out to people via email. I'm going to instigate a conversation. And mm-hmm. that takes a certain type of person. Not everybody can do that. Some people want to just sit back and there's a lot of recruiters out there, new and veterans, that just want to sit there and wait for the people to come in and engage them with for a few minutes and then push them off to the manager. But sourcing requires an interest in getting to know you, Luke. Understand what you want, what you're needing, what you need to make a change and an opportunity. Who is also impacted when you do decide to make that change if you're going to relocate? Those are all things that we have to understand. Because I go back and I say this a lot, is that changing jobs is like the third most stressful thing a person can go through. Marriage, divorce, mm-hmm. and changing jobs. I mean, that's pretty much high up there. And so many people take it so lightly that it's transactional. And it's not, changing jobs is not transactional. Most people have families. Most people are happy where they're at. And so when you're reaching out to them as a sourcer, you need to have that ability and that emotional intelligence to understand that you have to listen, you have to care, you have to do all these things. And it can't be superficial. It has to be sincere. And so if you can do that, then you're going to be successful as a sourcer. So it may work well, the company that you're talking about, having very experienced recruiters that have been doing this for 10 years, may be great. It may be great. And maybe all of them all have to have that mindset of, you know, what you need to have as a sourcer. But I don't think it really matters. I think that if they understand, I hate using the word sales, and every recruiter will probably beat me up for saying sales. If you don't know how to sell an opportunity, and then you don't know how to tie it into how to make it a match for the candidate, if you don't know how to do that, you're not going to be able to be a sourcer. A sourcer is going to do research. A sourcer is going to be list building. A sourcer is going to be doing the outreach. A sourcer is going to be connecting with them and having conversations with them and getting them engaged to the point where they want to talk to a candidate. And then they're going to nurture them so that way they stay interested throughout the whole process right there. So some recruiters don't have that mindset. We all have the capability. Some of us don't have that mindset, and that's right, wrong, or indifferent. It doesn't matter. It's a special skill, just like there are people that are recruiters that are very good at what they do. They're very detailed, and they can make sure that offer letter is perfect and no mistakes. I don't want to do that. I mean, most sourcers, they want to go out there and get the people engaged so that way they can get the offer, but they don't want to necessarily have to be making sure all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed on the offer letter there.
It's so fascinating because I've witnessed that not just with recruiters, but with HR in general. From my background. Mm-hmm. And I think you're 100% right. I don't think it matters that it's healthcare, but I can't tell you the number of conversations I've had in helping people and coaching my colleagues in human resources. And you literally sometimes have to ask the question, like, do you understand the profession that you got into?
Right.
Right. This is the people business. And if you don't like talking to people and getting to know people, because we're here in this company to support the people of the company, like, you know, it might be okay to like think about what you want to do in life, right? Because that it can be very difficult for you, because if you're constantly in fear of having conversations with folks, but yet that's what we need you to do, we're going to have to work on building your confidence and some other things for you to get along within the human resources profession as a whole. Yep, that's fascinating, though.
I agree.
That you're seeing that in talent acquisition, for sure.
So guys, you think, because I agree with you that recruitment is a lot like sales, but if we dial it in like to even subset of that, the word realtor just came to my mind as well. Because when I think sales, like, all right, I'm in sales. My conversations never start off with, hey, I want to buy something, ever. Right. So, but if you're in recruiting, you at least know, like, hey, we're talking because you're open to looking for a job. If we're talking, you're active, you know? And the realtors, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I don't talk to realtors unless I'm looking to buy a house, right? But then it goes into like, what are you looking for? Tell me about your family. Where do you want to be? And now I'm drawing these parallels to, wow, like these questions are kind of similar to what we're doing in recruiting.
They really are. And, you know, one thing I will say is that most people that I do get on the phone, they're not looking. I've talked to a couple of high level researchers today, and neither of them are looking. They're saying they're very happy, but they're intrigued by the organization that I work for and would like to learn more. And, you know, getting them on the hook so they can get me their resume. So I took them from a place where they're not interested to a place of now, I'm talking to them about if you were looking for an opportunity, to your point, how many rooms do you want in your house and so on and such like that? What would it take for you to make that change and be able to take those notes? Because at the end of the day, if they do get engaged and they are interested and we get to a place where we can make an offer to them, we go back to that in closing the deal and say, hey, this is what we're offering and these are the things that we're giving you. Is this something that you really want? And this is something that you've said at the beginning that you really want, and then be able to close that deal there. So it's so important. You know, I'm very big on connecting with the people that I recruit. And a lot of the reasons I do that, I probably spend too much time with my candidates, in more cases than not. And that is because I care. I want to be able to fill the position. But I also want to make sure that it's right for them. I tell people all the time, if this is not the right opportunity, let's just stay in touch and there'll be another position coming. I'm not going to want to try to push you into something that you aren't necessarily interested in. And that works out fine too. I mean, because at least then you become a trusted person in your profession because they know that you're not trying to just fill your rec. And that is important as well.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think back when I started in sales. This is many moons ago, right? And when I first started out, all right, there were certain metrics they looked at. It was all on the phone, by the way. So they like, if you're not always on the phone, there's different metrics you can track. But two metrics that fascinated me. One wasn't that surprising. People that had the most talk time on the phone, not calls, talk time, had sold the most. And then the other one I thought was fascinating, those who talked less than half the time sold more than anybody else. So anybody that had high talk time, but they were talking 70, 80% of the time, they weren't doing well. They weren't selling that much. You had people that were talking 25, 30% of the time, they were ringing the bell. So it kind of goes to like, you know, what you're saying, like, hey, have these conversations, listen to what people want, right? And find out and then make that match for them. Which I don't think we pay enough attention to just in general.
I agree. I think you're totally right.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% there, Luke. I really do. It's become, and some of this is to the default of, you know what, recruiters have a lot of requisitions and they don't have enough time to spend with each of the candidates to get to that point right there. But when you look at your success rate of candidates that you submit to get hired and that number is not real high, then maybe it would be beneficial if we just spend a little bit more time with them, because then maybe your submittal to hire rate would be better because you would get to know them a little bit more. You'd have less drop off and you'd also have some more information that you can share with the manager why you're submitting that candidate for the position. Because, you know, we don't, as a recruiter, we don't just submit a candidate and on its merit from a resume. We need to tell a story to that manager why we are submitting, because then that will help influence the manager, one, to want to talk to them. And it will stick in their mind when they're talking to them and probably help them influence their decision to actually hire them as well.
Absolutely right. That's right. Matt,
that's a great point.
Matt, tell us about your setup as well. So I imagine it's more of a, like, is it full desk recruiters? Is it assembly line? Is it a mixture of the two? Tell us about what you have going on so other folks can learn from how you have things set up.
Yeah, definitely. This is my third organization of building and starting up a sourcing team. And it is true sourcing, meaning that we are not managing requisition, we're managing talent. And what that means is that we were built, each of our teams that I've built, we're built to focus on sourcing on those key roles, the ones that are making the biggest pain point in our organization. So in healthcare, we know what it is. It's housekeeping. No, it's registered nursing. it's registered nursing. And so with registered nursing, I have a sorcerer on my team, and that's all she does every day. She goes and does outreach to nurses for our markets every single day. I have a small and mighty team here. When my previous organization, I started with myself and slowly added and built up to 9 people on my team. And we were impacting that organization's hires by about 12% of our hires each month were coming from the sourcing team. And so when you think about that, we were still only like 7% of the whole TA team. So we were producing more than what our size of our small team here. I have a very small team here right now. I have 2 sourcers and I have a marketing person as well. That for TA that we do all our marketing, branding, and advertising as well for TA. But my 2 sourcers, they're again just sourcing specific roles. One is doing nursing and helping out with some research, and then I have another one that's doing some of the allied positions. And so all they are doing is doing outreach, engaging. They are screening, and then they're submitting to the recruiter so they can get them in front of the manager so that they can ultimately get hired. So we do not manage how we rate our performance is based on submittals, hires per month, and then also quality of candidates that are submitted as well. So we monitor all those things right there. And one of the things that we've been able to do here is in success is be able to take some of these high level positions in our organization that traditionally previously would be outsourced to a third party professional recruiter. Sorry, I had to do that professional recruiter thing. And keep them in house and be able to successfully fill those positions and save our organization hundreds of thousands, if not probably millions of dollars in the last year. So it's really about, it's really focusing on that front side of recruiting. So there's marketing, there is what we're doing with all this information as we collect it, whether it's through LinkedIn, Indeed, or just Google searches, is we're adding them into our CRM. And then what we're doing is nurturing that talent and we're keeping that talent warm until they are ready to go as well right there. So we're full cycle. We're a very small team. You know, for healthcare, you know, if I have my sourcer for nursing, she's averaging 4 to 5 sourced hired nurses a month, which Ooh. Is pretty good because they're OR nurses. They're hard to fill nurses. So we're trying to focus on the hardest positions where we need the greatest help so we can provide the care that we need to for our patients in our organization.
Super cool. Matt, I want to drill into the sourcing a little more. So tell me a little bit about the, what type of outreach? You mentioned mindset, right? So tell the listeners, is it just like, hey, it's Matt, you're looking for a job? Or like, is it a more personal aspect? Like what type of, because there is a propensity. I could listen to this and go, you know what? I'm just going to load everyone into MailChimp and hit send.
You know, is there a template to use? No, I don't think so. I mean, I think that, you know, before the pandemic, I think the latest and the greatest thing that you saw coming out was all these people that were sourcers that were spending 20 minutes on every message they sent out when they were sourcing. I don't know if you remember some of those speakers at conferences that were talking about.
Sure.
And that was great, but no recruiter or sourcer has 20 minutes to send out to write a unique message for each person that they're going to connect with there. And so, you know, it's unique. You have to look at the situation. And one of the things that I tell people, and I'm going to go to my LinkedIn profile here for a second. Most people, when they have their LinkedIn profile, they have their company name on the banner. I have a picture of Cannon Beach. And the reason I do is, if I'm reaching out to people, I want people to reply back to me and see something that makes me more human. Mm-hmm. And so I get a lot of people that reply back and say, where's that beach? I looked at your profile after you messaged me. Where's that beach at? And I'll say, Cannon Beach, Oregon. And they're like, oh, I've heard of that. And it starts a conversation. And so many people just put their company name on that banner. And that's great. I don't have I don't do it personally. I tell people, if you want to go for it, it will help bring your brand awareness as a recruiter of somebody that works for that organization, but you should be working on your personal brand of being human and being real. And so your messages should be that as well. And so a lot of my messages are talking, I mean, I put a first line in there about my week so far. I mean, about how great my week is or what's going on in sports or something. And then I really dig into the position and talk about their experiences, what they have. I am one against most odds of other people is I make my messages a little bit longer. And I think you have to be flexible in doing that and knowing that, you know, there's some roles that you can get away with a message that's 100 words or 100 text characters long. But some messages, if you're talking about high-level people and you're talking about leaders, you may need to put a little bit more into it so that way they understand and that they know it's not just a drive-by message that you're trying to get them to reply back to. So I think it's diversity and it's flexibility and how you write those messages. We meet as a team, and I did this in my last organization, and we're starting to do it now. We meet in our team when our response rates start to drop and say, okay, what do we need to do differently? Even when mine drop, I say, you know, what do we need to do differently? How can we engage people? What are the tools doing? What are the tools doing? What are the resources are doing that are preventing us to get better responses? You know, there's tools out there that are doing everything they can that even though we pay lots of money for them, everything they can to make it harder for us to connect with the people in their platform. And so we have to figure out how we can overcome that. Even emails, you know, if you're using Outlook or Google or whatever, they're making it more and more difficult for you to do outreach as well. So it's really just trying to beat the system so that you can get connected to them and then write a message so compelling that at least they want to reply back. And if they just reply back, I think the biggest piece that most recruiters don't do is when I reach out to you, Bo, and I tell you about an opportunity, you say, Bo says to Matt, says, you know what? Thanks, not interested. Most recruiters leave it there and they don't do anything else. 99.9% of the time, I will reply back and just say, thanks for taking the time to reply. Although you're not interested, I'd love to stay in touch with you. Maybe there'll be another opportunity. And you know what? About a third of the time, they reply back and then they want to learn a little bit about something because you get their interest and you actually are human. You're being somebody that most other recruiters aren't, and that is just not responsive. So I like to try in my messaging to have the last word. So if they say no, I'm going to thank them for replying and then wait for them to see what happens. And if they don't, I'll follow up with them in the future, hopefully.
So true. Just being human, Matt. Like this is unbelievably easy. You think about...
I've only had that happen once. And it was, I think it was last year, beginning of last year, where the recruiter did exactly that. I said, no, I'm happy. Like I'm happy what I'm doing. Not really interested or looking to make a move. And he did exactly that. He did exactly what you just said, Matt. And you want to know what? I got on the phone and I had a call with him to meet him because you feel a connection, right? Like there's no pressure. Hey, you're one more person I know now in my network. And that's kind of how the recruiter was approaching it. But I will tell you from the candidate side of things, and you obviously understand this, that if I was, or even if I wanted to be proactive and go look, he's probably one of the first people I'm contacting.
Yep.
Right. Yeah, it's powerful.
And there's like no competition. So think about listeners. All right, everybody. So the three of us on this show can do this. But if I think for myself, all the emails I got today, and I take out Phenom, the company I work for. So I'm not thinking internal emails where I know they're human and people. Outside of that, I bet I got two, maybe three messages that were from an actual human today. Now I got 100 that were email campaigns from God knows who, right? Like, and I just delete them. I archive them. I swipe left on my iPhone all day long. But I get one, to your point, Matt, I get one from somebody like you that I know is a human that is mentioning something personal to me and is just seems cool to talk to. I don't get that many of those. I'm interested to respond. I just want to talk to a human. Don't we all?
Right. Yep. And go back to the messaging, Luke. You know, I think, and we're hearing about AI. We're hearing about ChatGPT that's been around for 18 months now, and everybody using it to write their messages. You know what? When it came out, I was a disbeliever. I was a believer for about a half a second, and then I kind of went back to being a disbeliever on using it for messaging. And the reason I did was because people can really point out ChatGPT messages. They really can. And one of the things I've always taught my recruiters, my sourcers, and any presentation I did is when you write your message, write it in your voice. Yeah. And what I mean by that, write it how you would speak. Now, I know that's not normal in the way that people write. They want to write a very professional, blocked letter to somebody about something. I tell people, you know what, when I write, I sit there and actually just talk it out. And then I make, obviously, a couple updates on it to correct it. But I want it to sound like I'm actually talking to them and talking with them versus writing a form message that is not going to get any kind of response right there. And AI, unfortunately, that's what it does. And I think it also, again, you lose the ability to show who you really are as a human, as a recruiter, when you're using ChatGPT or any kind of AI product.
You're right. I got a trick for listeners too, Matt. And if you haven't, I'm sure you already do this, but if you're on a Mac, I can tell you how to do it on a Mac. I'm sure you can do it on a PC, but I don't know how. You get the function key at the bottom left. If you double tap that, you can just talk. And then if you download Grammarly for free, it'll actually go through it and in real time, put it in your kind of somewhat professional structure. And then you can just click on it and choose like, okay, fix that. Don't fix that. It adds in your periods and commas and caps. It is so much easier and fun because I can just talk and be like, hey, Matt, saw you were listed as a top 40 healthcare influencer. Would love to get your idea on a couple of things. And it's going to work, right? To your point of like writing in your own voice, just an easy way to do it.
Right. And I think that's where, you know, from the AI perspective, it's a skill and it's like anything else. And I think this is where the people that use it and will prosper, because I use it, but you can, the difference today versus years in the past, you can actually teach ChatGPT and other AI tools, how to speak the way you speak, but you got to put in the time to do that. So if all you're doing is giving it basic prompts, hey, write me a message to, you know, to Matt Craven. I want to ask him to, you know, apply to this job, make it professional, like basic stuff like that. 100% it's going to sound like ChatGPT. That's going to sound like AI, nothing personal about it. But in time, those that actually figure it out and how to actually teach the platform, so that it does sound like you.
Yeah.
It could be a game changer from an efficiency standpoint if you take the time to train the machine to do what you need it to do.
I'd love to run an experiment sometime, Matt, and I think it would work, right? So here's my experiment, bring it a bit, because you got me thinking so hard about sourcing now in just a different way, you know? major health systems that have a huge brand in an area, right? You look at a company, everyone knows where the hospital is, and if you're a nurse, like, oh, so you know it's there. They've probably already applied. I feel like recruiters just get bogged down because there's so much information and so many people. You start working applications. I would love an experiment where you went through an ATS and you say, all right, here's 200 people I know live in this area and I know that they're qualified. Like, just pending a cultural interview, we would hire these folks tomorrow. And you went to a recruiter and said, guess what? All you get is these 200 people for the year. Just have good conversations and get them hired. I bet it'd work pretty darn well. I bet they'd go out there and make relationships and get those folks in.
I agree. You know, one of the things that, you know, I said, and I'm going to go out of industry here for a second, but when I was at Schneider, we did a lot of advertising, and you know, one of the things that advertising did is it got the wrong people. I use the Coca-Cola billboards as a mindset here. You know, we think advertising is going to generate traffic, and sometimes it does, but with a Coca-Cola ad, you drive by it in your car. If you're not a Coca-Cola drinker, you don't care about it, you're going to drive by, you're not going to look at it. People are going to look at it and they're going to see and they're not going to be interested. I mean, and so you waste a lot of money hoping that the right person that's going to see it is going to ultimately end up buying your product at some point in time in the future. And that's the same way of advertising jobs, is that you're hoping somebody will see the job. And most likely it could be the wrong person. And so what I shared with a few recruiters on that had situations where they would get 150 people apply and only two people were qualified, they kept saying, well, we need to advertise more. I said, how about if we just turn the job posting off and just source and went after the people that we knew that we wanted? I bet you'd waste less time doing that because you wouldn't be going through the 175 applications to see if they're qualified. You'd actually be spending time looking at the people that you know are qualified, and all you have to do is influence them to consider you for an opportunity.
It would work.
Big difference. Yes. Absolutely.
Matt, I'm with you. Well, I hope people listen to this and then they go back into the office the next day, or like they're listening to the car on their way in and they come and they throw open the door and they go, everyone be quiet. I have an idea. Turn off all the job postings.
Yeah.
Here's your list of people.
Well, unfortunately, the only bad thing about that, though, Luke, is you have to influence your leaders at the decision-making of the higher level to do that as well, because they will scream and rant and rave that they can't see their jobs out there, and then they'll think that we're not doing anything.
That's the truth.
That's where data is so important. That's where data is so important that we need to go back and say, hey, I reached out to 20 people, 7 of them aren't interested. And by the way, here's 3 people for your one role right there. And so data drives decisions on that as well. So just people think that recruiting is so simple and they think that sourcing is simple, but there's a complexity to it that we're not even scratching the surface as a entity and organization. I'm not organization as an industry to be able to report out on that, because the more we can report data on what we're doing and how we're doing it, the more we'll be able to influence leaders to change the way they think on how we should be looking for talent. Because one of the things that I shared with a leader years ago, I said, you're an expert in engineering, right? And they go, yep. I don't ever tell you about how to do your job as an engineer, right? Nope. I said, I'm an expert in recruiting, but you give me lots of tips on what I should do in recruiting. What I want to do is share with you my expertise, and here it is. And then let's go walk through this. And he goes, you know what? You got to handle. And that's what he said. You got to handle. I don't need to tell you how to recruit anymore. I don't need to tell you what pages, what career sites or what entities or organizations you need to go after. You've got that handle. And I think that we as recruiters need to do a better job to show the professional aptitude that we have to our leaders, the business acumen that we have to be able to do our job. And that will help influence leaders to truly trust us so that we can just go and do our job and get them great people and close their positions.
Amen, Matt.
Yep.
And I could talk to you all day long. I could. We'll have to have you back on here. But as we wind down, I let you know at the end of every episode, we let you just say whatever you want, do shout outs, give any, mic drop moments. So for the next few minutes here, it's the Matt Craven show, folks.
Man, I don't really like talking about myself, although my wife upstairs might say differently there. But you know what? This is what I'll say. In our profession, the thing that drives me and the thing that I try to utilize as a way to motivate my own team and people that I know that are in this industry that I interact with is you've got to have the passion to do this. You really do. This is not a job that is administrative. It is not a task-driven position. It's not a profession where we are order takers. We really need to take control. We need to be better as professionals. We need to understand that there's so many different dynamics to what we do, and it's the human element that's so important. And so as many technologies that are out there with all the CRMs, the recruiting tools, the ATSs, ChatGPT, whatever it is, the one thing that recruiters will tell you is that they bog you down and they will slow you down. And what I would like to say to recruiters is that look at the tools that you have. And if they're not working for you, don't use them. And if there are tools out there that are working for you, use them to death. I think a lot of what happens is organizations will get all these tools and think that they're making it easier. But unfortunately, a lot of these decision makers for these tools haven't used them ever and have not recruited in a very, very long time. And they think what they've heard from a salesperson that this is going to solve all your problems. There are no perfect tools. There are no perfect processes. It's a journey that you have to take. And you know what tool works for my team may not work for your team. And so you have to try them. You have to work them. You have to work them and see which one works for you so that you can be successful. But you have to have that passion to want to do that. But if you have that passion, you're going to be successful and never give up. I mean, I can ramble on here. I feel like I'm rambling, Luke. So no, I don't know if I want to say. I mean, this is what I will say. This is what I will say is that healthcare, when I got into it in 2001, let me take a step back. When I got into recruiting in 1997 and I look back today at recruiting, I've said this in the last few years here. I've said recruiting has not changed that much fundamentally from 97 to now. I've had people say, oh yes, there's ChatGPT, there's tools. I said, but in all reality, the way that we do things, the functionality of the process of the way that we do things have not changed. And I challenge leaders, recruiters, anybody that's in this space to look at how we do things and figure out how we can do it better. I have ideas. I know there's lots of people out there that have ideas. And, you know, even though Luke, you and I are influencers, the one thing that I tell people when I've spoken before is that, you know, we all have ideas. Even if you're not an influencer, if you're not classified as an influencer, we all have great ideas and we all need to come together and share those ideas. And it shouldn't just come from influencers or speakers. It should come from those people that are doing things, doing the job every day, because you know what? Everybody has a lot of great ideas. And so I challenge recruiters. If you have good ideas, share them. If you're doing something that is getting hires, share that with your peers. Because knowledge is so important in this space here. And we can really change the way that we do things here. And in the healthcare in specific, you know, the one thing I will say in 2001 to now is we're in the same situation we are with nursing as we were in 2001. There's a nursing shortage. You haven't done anything to fix that. And so there's an opportunity for us right now to fix that now. So that way in 20 years, we're not looking back at this and saying, wow, guess what? We haven't fixed the problem yet. And I think there's a huge component of it that we can do in TA. And that's another story right there. But thank you for having me here, Luke and Bo. I appreciate it. I too can talk on this. It's something that I'm very passionate about. I could talk about it all day long. So I appreciate your time. I thank you guys for having me on your show.
Matt, thanks so much.
Of course.
You're always welcome back. And listeners, you've been listening to Matt Craven, Director of TA at City of Hope. And if you take one thing away from this, you need to go back to the table, back with the recruiters, talk about mindset and sourcing. Because if you don't, Matt Craven has come to steal all your employees. We heard it today. So, Matt, we greatly appreciate it, man. And you're welcome back anytime.
I'd love to come back. So thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it. Nice meeting you, Bo. And thank you guys for having me.
Absolutely. And Asher listeners, that's a wrap.